Welcome to episode 2 of Cow Daily. Bloody hell, somebody straight in there. We've got one viewer so far. Let me know in the comments if you're about in the now time on a tradition, everybody. Takes a bit of while for you to get there because of the lag or something. So this week on Cow Daily, we will be talking about the police and crime bill. Probably you'll know it more by the Kill the Bill hashtag. And also the forthcoming cost of living crisis. And also as a palate cleanser at the end, we'll be talking about positive news. How's that sounding for you, Alice?
I think I need some positive news at the minute. So that sounds really good to me.
Cool, man. And also as well, we'll be having a guest kindly join me this week. And that'll be Zoe Quick, who is... Well, she was at the protest in London at the weekend. And she's kindly agreed to come on and tell a little bit more about that. So happy bloody days, eh?
Yeah.
So what have you been doing? What have you been up to?
I have been feeding crows, which is a regular thing with me, if you know anything. And they're starting to like follow me down the street now, which is great.
It's starting to?
Yeah, it's like my actual street that I live on.
Oh, your actual street, so they're following you all the way to your street.
Not just in the place where I live, yeah. So I'm starting to like develop the kind of creepy reputation I've always, the teenage goth self, always longed for, really. And other than that, I've just been drinking really strong coffee, which is why I might seem like a little bit wired. Because, you know, when you get into your 40s and stuff, like, you know, it's kind of like, oh, should I have a cup of coffee if it's after 7 o'clock? You know, it's like in the same way that you debate double dropping calories when you're in your 20s or something.
Well, I'm off the coffee completely now, you know, completely off it. Like, I just cannot do it. It just wrecks us, which is like, that's made me 40. So I have a pucker peace tea in one of these travel to go cups, which I made like 2 hours ago.
It's a yin and yang with our drinks.
Just a bit. I mean, I'll provide the calmness as usual there. So should we just get straight into it? Zoe's going to join me a little bit later, but if we get into the sort of policing and crime bill, because there's a lot to cover this week, as there is every week, and I mean, we could have covered a hell of a lot more, couldn't we? Also, just if people could go to the YouTube channel, and if you could watch, we're there, it really helps. Simply because we're trying to like build up watch hours to monetize the channel and progress it that way. Also, it helps to go up at that algorithm, and we really want to try and focus on YouTube. So if you could go to the link in the pinned post on the Milk the Cow Facebook page, you'll go straight through to the Cow Daily YouTube channel. Or Instagram, if you're on there, if you go to the links in bio, there's one of those like all link tree things. If you just go on there, you'll find the link for that. So, starting off, just a little bit of an explainer on the policing and crime bill, just to get we're going. So, the bill is a mammoth piece of legislation which includes major government proposals around crime and justice in England and Wales. It needs to be passed by both the House of Commons and the House of Lords to become law. The government has been defeated in the House of Lords on some of the bills. This happened last night. Some of the bill's most contentious parts, including plans to give police new powers to stop protests in England and Wales if they're deemed to be too noisy and disruptive. The bill now faces going back and forth between the Commons and Lords until agreement is reached. But some of the measures that the Lords rejected cannot now feature in the final legislation because the government introduced them like last minute. Right. These include one of the most high-profile proposals, which would have made it illegal for protesters like Insulate Britain to cause serious disruption by locking themselves onto things. This measure could now only be brought back by the government in an entirely new bill, which is great. We're going to talk about some of the policing bill victories and things like that later on. So, next slide. So what powers do the police now have? If the police want to restrict a protest, they generally have to show it may result in serious public disorder, serious damage to property, or serious disruption to the life of the community. They can also impose specific measures on the routes of marches. So when it comes to major events such as COP26, details around protests are typically agreed with the organisers a week in advance. So Alice, my friend, what are you saying? What do you think of that?
We'll get onto the victories later, I think. You know, obviously there has been a little bit of good news around this. I think for me, it just gave me flashbacks of 94 when we had the amendments to the Criminal Justice Bill, which for anybody who doesn't remember that or doesn't know what it is, that was a lot of the legislation which essentially kind of made a rave illegal, but there was lots of other, like, you know, it affected lots of different people, you know, kind of people from the gypsy and traveller community, as does this bill as well, and, you know, was effectively going to, you know, make their entire way of life illegal. And I think the two things, those two bills, the one in 94 and this new one, which is the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, what they have in common is that there's actually loads of different proposals in it. And they'll pick, you know, when they're kind of talking about it in the news, you know, when you hear kind of any of the MPs come on or any of the ministers, they'll try and sell it in a way, you know, they'll pick out the bits that they know the public are, you know, really likely to support. And for this latest one, one of those was, you know, part of the bill talks about the, you know, not allowing the early release of violent and sexual offenders, having whole life sentences for people, you know, who have premeditated the murder of a child, things like that. You're going to get massive amounts of public support. And they kind of don't talk as much about the other bits, which is the really, you know, the really worrying elements on, you know, attacks on our civil liberties. And it was essentially going to make any kind of protest illegal because, you know, what protest doesn't cause annoyance, really? Like, of course it does. It's always, you know, it's always going to get in somebody's way. But that isn't, you know, that isn't a reason to bring in these measures. And it worried me. It worried me really, really greatly because they were, you know, they're looking at imposing massive, massive sentences, like up to 10 years for damaging a statue. You know, I kind of work on the fringes of the criminal justice system, and I see people not getting even a fraction of that for, you know, sexual assaults and things like that, you know, but for damaging a statue. But again, it's been hyped. That was hyped up so much in the media that you're going to get some people who are going to be supporting that and, you know, saying, oh yeah, bloody protesters and things like that, particularly things like Extinction Rebellion and Insulate Britain, who have been in the news a lot. And again, you know, as much as I don't agree with a lot of their tactics, you know, there has been a great deal of demonization there.
Of course, yeah.
And that kind of that always kind of gathers some public support for bills like this. But what you've got to think about is, whether you like it or not, it's worrying because every single liberty, a single civil liberty that we have, every single one has been, you know, it hasn't been given to us out the goodness of the heart of the politicians. It's been fought for, and that's everything from like maternity leave to sickness pay, you know, to the development of the NHS and things like that. And that is why we desperately need to protect it. And yeah, it frightens me, if I'm honest.
I mean, what the fact that, like, they're bringing in what is effectively fascist level controls in well, just England and Wales. I don't want to keep saying the UK, because Wales and Scotland appear to be a much more civilized place to be.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you realize how bad it is, actually, when you see the way this bill is reported on in other countries as well. Like, you know, there's like people around the world are going, oh my god, they're doing what? You know, it's like in the Dutch papers, and that, you know, there was like this massive article about it in Al Jazeera as well. It's really, really terrifying, and the rest of the world is like kind of looking on in horror at what on earth is starting to happen here. I think Al Jazeera referred to the far right minister Priti Patel.
Really?
Yeah.
See, like, I've not really seen any international stuff, so this is all new to me. I've just been like obviously focusing on researching it from like UK media and seeing how they're responding and reacting to it. That's really interesting. Zoe's in the green room, so let's bring her in and just ask her a little bit about what went on at the weekend, shall we?
Yeah, definitely.
Zoe, how are we doing?
Hi, Zoe.
Hi. Hi.
Hi, nice,
nice one.
I'm massively relieved my equipment works for a start.
Yeah, it's good. Do you want to tell everybody where you're calling in from?
I'm calling in from Cumbria. Mm-hmm. here on the bus where I live at the present time.
So what's your setup? Because it will not be Wi-Fi, is it? Is it like through like a 4G dongle or something like that?
Yeah, well, I'm not completely off grid. I do pick up a signal from a neighbour, so I do have Wi-Fi.
Ah, good stuff.
So nice hopefully it'll keep going.
Well, Zoe, it's very kind of you to join. And obviously, just for the viewers and listeners, the reason we've asked you to come on is that you were actually at the protests in London. Was it in London at the weekend? Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff. So, do you want to let me know why you actually decided to go? What compelled you to go?
Well, it's not the first Kill the Bill protest that I've been to, although the previous one that I went to was quite a small local one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, my ability to travel around the country and attend all these protests is somewhat limited. But it was fortuitous. I was in London anyway that weekend. I would have gone to one probably more local if I hadn't have been, I must admit. But it was a stroke of fortune from my perspective that I was down in London that weekend, so I was able to attend the one there. I've been on the Kill the Bill protest previously because it's such an incredibly important piece of legislation to resist, as far as I'm concerned. As I'm sure you may have already discussed, the powers within it to try and quash people's ability to protest, and the powers within it also to try and quash people's ability to carry out a nomadic way of life to strip away the rights of a whole sector of our society, you know, the cultural traditions of an ethnic group within our society. I mean, it's a racist piece of legislation as well.
Do you want to expand on that? Are you talking about the GRT, sort of gypsy traveller community, yeah?
Yeah, so I have a little bit of background in myself in that I lived with the convoy for a while in my teens. Mm-hmm. And so I've lived with that sort of traveller lifestyle. I've also spent quite a lot of time around Gypsy and Roma people in various different times in my life. I used to live somewhere where there was a regular horse fair, that kind of thing. And the powers that they were bringing in, that they want to bring in to do things like impound people's homes, and to do that really swiftly, to give you virtually no time to move on before they can come along and take your home away from you, which is making people immediately homeless as well. When we live in a time with such a massive housing crisis going on, and I used to work in homelessness very recently, I used to work with Rough Sleepers very recently, and I'm very aware of the housing crisis going on. I can't afford to rent where I live. That's pushing more people into that. But there are other ways of living as well, other ways of getting by, and they know that, you know. So as well as that persecution of a sector of our society and their traditional way of life.
What do you think their motivation is for the persecution? Because I can't get my head around why that is. Why do they want to kind of drag people back into what they consider to be an acceptable way of living?
When I was discussing this with someone on a forum the other day, when I myself was living on a traveller site many, many years ago, I mean, this was when I was sort of 18, so it was in the early 90s, many years ago, there was a family there, the only family that had children, and they were being put under pressure by the council and social services. We've offered you a council house, you have to move into it, otherwise we'll take your kids into care. And they've done that kind of thing for a long time, you know, under the radar, because nobody's paying any attention to that apart from the people who are affected by it. There's always been a pressure to try and push people away from those alternative ways of living. And I think it just terrifies the mainstream. It attacks their ideology. in a sense, it's another form of activism to live differently, to live outside of the norm. I think that really makes them nervous. I think that this whole piece of legislation is about how nervous we make them in one way or another. You know, this is seeking to demoralize and criminalize dissent and alternatives.
Just in line with what you're saying, Zoe, there's one of the biggest and fastest growing subreddits on Reddit is our anti-work. And there's this kind of meme that's happening around the world where people are realizing that capitalism is not serving their needs and they're working to make somebody else rich and giving away parts of their soul to do it just to survive or even in some cases barely subsist. So there's been like a spate of mass resignations, particularly in America, where people are like, fuck it, you do it. So I think that is terrifying people. And we're going to talk later in the show about the cost of living crisis as well. So I hope you stay tuned for that because it'll cover some of these things. I mean, for me, with the traveler lifestyle, like you, we were involved in the rave scene and whatever else when we were a bit younger. And obviously, you know, back then it was the illegal scene. It was like very traveler led and like lots of different kinds of people. I think they're scared of that too. I think they're scared of lots of different people from different strata of society coming together, particularly in that kind of like dancing and drum beat thing, because historically that's always brought people together anyway. It's humans, it's innate. So well, I think there's go ahead, Dallas, what are you going to say?
Yeah, I said that is what happened in 94. I mean, you know, you saw like the punks and the ravers and the Huntsabs and the travelers all actually working together. And I think they were a little bit like, oh shit. Like,
they were crapping themselves about it. I was talking when this bill first came in, when we first started talking about it last year, I was talking with friends again from the sort of old school traveler community, people that I've met online and things like that, about the fact that this feels like it's the 80s and early 90s again, all over again. It's that intensification of trying to shut us down, that alternative culture, that DIY culture, that people building stuff at grassroots level, rejecting the mainstream. It's got a similar feel to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you're right to bring up about the seizure of homes as well. And it's, I think that's what people don't realise is, you know, kind of how devastating that would be. And that community's already been hammered by these legislations, which is what I was just saying before. And I've worked alongside sort of the Gypsy and Traveller community in my work as well. And I've seen, you know, and this is going back years ago, but things like bailiffs setting fire to their belongings and then saying, oh, look, you know, to the community, oh, look at the mess these travellers made, when it was actually them that did it by setting fire to their stuff. One of the Gypsy and Traveller liaison officers for one of the local authorities as well was also based in the pest control department as well, which really gave you a bit of an idea about how they were viewed.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm saying that's going back a bit. It wasn't that long ago to make that even remotely acceptable. Yeah.
Indeed. So Zoe, can I ask you, like, why do you think and it might sound like a very basic question, but obviously sometimes like it gets the best answers. Why do you think the right to protest is important?
Oh, gosh. because we have to be able to dissent, we have to be able to disagree, we have to be able to have a voice to do that with, and we have to have a voice for those people as well who can't do it for themselves. You know, I was thinking about this question loads all day, and I was thinking about, as an example, I was fortunate enough to be able to go up to Glasgow for the COP26 protest as well. And when I arrived, I ended up joining up with one of the Extinction Rebellion groups. And at the front of the Extinction Rebellion group, there was, they were called the Sapara tribe from the Amazon. Representatives who had come all that way to march with Extinction Rebellion in Glasgow with a baby. And it was beautiful to see them, but it was also really, really painfully poignant for me, because When I first started protesting, which was around about the age of sort of 14, 15, I got involved with CND, I got involved with Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth and stuff like that. The very first picket that I ever did, the very first on the street protest I ever did, was outside McDonald's, and it was about deforestation in the Amazon and it for production of beef. And it really hit home to me that that is 34 years ago. Most of it's gone now. So much of it's gone now. And these wonderful people coming all of this way to still try and stand up for that environment and stand up for their rights. I think that they are trying to demoralize us into compliance. And I think that, you know, by criminalizing protests, that's what you do. You try and demoralize people into compliance because you make it such a risk for them to speak out and to stand up that they're afraid to do so. And for me, that's as well as physically quashing protest with police officers and arrests and everything else, it's trying to do it in people's minds as well. It's trying to instill that sense of fear and risk about exercising your democratic right to dissent, which is at the heart of our democracy.
Some of the best things that have happened.
So important.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's a great answer. And some of the best things that have that are in our society are as a direct result of protest over the years.
Absolutely. You know, I think Liberty described it as an attack on our political participation, was how they worded it as well. And it absolutely is. Mm-hmm. They're even trying to target, you know, the bill was even going to target legal observers, which is terrifying. Legal observers, if you don't know, they're not active participants of a protest. They're just there to make sure that if people get, watch what's happening, make sure that there's kind of no breaches of human rights, making sure that people have access to solicitors and know what to do if they get arrested. They're literally just passing out information to it, and that's it. The fact that they were also, you know, under threat from this as well just kind of shows you the sort of direction the state is starting to go in and has been for a long time.
Indeed. And I mean, I must admit, I have been quite scared myself as well, but I mean, obviously, we slag the House of Lords off quite a bit. I don't think it should exist. But if it didn't exist, then there wouldn't be this kind of game of ping pong, as it's been described, between the Commons and the Lords. And there were some victories last night. So I'll just pull them up on screen and maybe see what yous are saying about them. So one of the wins last night, criminalising protests that were deemed too noisy or disruptive, was defeated by 261 votes to 166 in the Lords. Criminalising locking on, and I gave a cheer when I saw this one, whereby protesters lock themselves together or other objects to make it harder for police to move them, was defeated by 216 votes to 163. Criminalising interference with key national infrastructure, such as printing presses, roads, railways and airports, were defeated by 198 votes to 153. Obviously, for people like Insulate Britain, Extinction Rebellion and whatnot, that's a really, a really great thing, because lives could have been ruined if that had passed.
I was thinking the other day, if they had bought this in when me and you were really active, Mike, we'd be live streaming this from HMP Low Newton in Northumberland.
Yeah, would have got somebody to get a drone with a phone. You get that in there.
But we did lock-ons, we did occupations, we did all of this stuff. And now we're seeing kids who were even younger than us back then doing this, kids who are in school and, getting involved in all of the climate change protests. And it effectively would be criminalising them from a really, really young age. And I don't know if you saw either of you saw the letter. There's 350 clinical psychologists and clinicians and academics who've signed this letter saying they were really worried about the effect this bill was going to have on the mental health of young people and its ability to isolate and, kind of disempower them.
Indeed. Indeed, man. So some further wins: criminalising obstructing major transport works, defeated by 208 votes to 154. A bit closer, that one. probably a few populist bits of thinking from the Lords there, because it's been, never been off the front pages, like whenever there's an Insulate Britain thing happening. Allowing police to stop and search people if they suspected an offence was being planned. That was defeated by 205 votes to 141. Allowing police to stop and search people at protests without having to give a reason. Defeated by 212 votes to 128. Allowing the courts to ban regular protesters from even attending some protests. Defeated by 199 votes to 124. Some people must have went to the toilet. They have done some quick maths. So there's another slide after this, but let's focus on these ones. I mean, what that actually means for people in real life. I mean, criminalizing people like en masse like this is absolutely stupid. Simply because, you know, a lot of protesters are quite young. What would this look like on DBS checks if they were to work in certain sectors? Obviously, they're out there trying to work on behalf of us. The question before I move on to the next slide for like either of you is, like, why are they targeting the protesters rather than, say, targeting climate change? What do you think that's about?
Lobbyists, basically. They're not going to target climate change because there's certain lobbyists who you know, kind of will pay good money to make sure that they don't put that sort of legislation in, really. Obviously, as well, things are going to get worse as well, you know, from what we can see. And, you know, there is going to be more discontent, and they're trying to make sure that they have the powers to absolutely hammer anybody who tries to say no to them.
Yeah. Zoe, what do you think about all that?
That was my thinking. That they're creating the conditions which will lead to more dissent. And they know they are. And capitalism, innit? You know, they're not going to crack down on climate change because that spoils things for their friends in the short term. Mm-hmm. As you say, the lobbyists are in control of that situation. So they're going to try and crack down on protests because it scares them. Because they know that they're creating the conditions where there are going to be more people wanting to protest.
True that. I mean, it's always scared them, but I think they've looked at this majority that they won in the 2019 election and thought, shit or bust, let's just try and get as much as we possibly can in. I think from doing some reading since last night's Lord's stuff, a lot of these things that they brought in, they've managed to jettison them in the Lords, and they can't actually bring them back when it goes back and forth between the Commons because they were last minute ones. So the way that it works legally within the Lords is it's voted on once and then it's kicked out. So we're fortunate in that regard. But as we'll maybe expand a little bit on later, the Tories could just put a whole new bill in with them and then try and pass them. So we'll see. But final slide on some of these victories. The policing bill's third reading in the Lords, at which peers can suggest further changes, will take place on the 25th of January. So really the message for us is stay vigilant. Before the bill passes back to the Commons, MPs will then consider the Lords' amendments and either vote to accept them and pass the bill as it now stands, or make further changes and send the bill back to the Lords. There is, in theory, no limit to the number of times this can happen. This is where the ping-pong thing comes in. It's known as ping-pong in practice. It's the two if the two houses can't agree, the government could either choose to kill the bill or to pass it unilaterally at a later date using powers in the Parliament Acts that give the lower house ultimate authority. Which, to me, is let's stay vigilant. There's still a little bit to be concerned a bit here. What are your thoughts?
I think we do need to look at what else we can do. You know, marches are fine, but it's kind of looking at what else do we need to be doing, you know, about that to try and challenge this. We can't, you know, I think one thing that's become really apparent is we can't rely on the supposed opposition party to oppose it because they, you know, with the exception of a few of them, you know, they haven't really kind of done a great deal.
Keir Starmer's a fucking cop, man. He's just like Reg Hollis incarnate from the Bill. Like, did you not see him last night when he was like Tommy Corbyn shared it because, you know, he runs the National Hemp Service in London, CBD shop. And Starmer was asked on LBC about like legalization of weed and whatever. And he was like, all these cases that passed over my desk, county lines and all of this. I'm sorry, I just don't agree with Sadiq Khan about having these certain zones in London where it's decriminalized and whatever. the county lines would disappear if you legalized weed and other drugs, and maybe took like a Portuguese view of it, where it's harm reduction, it's putting the money into rehab for people and enabling them to come back into society. I mean, people can research the figures, but there's been a huge drop off in crime and in death. And one thing I found out about Portugal, actually, when they had fascist dictatorship with Salazar, they were artificially, the junta was artificially lowering the price of heroin. So people like us and any kinds of dissent, people would just get addicted because of the futility of life and the grayness of life. So it's to your point earlier, Zoe, it's like they're trying in some respects to go down that Salazar kind of route by just like knocking the stuff in and the hope out of everybody, probably in the hope that we'll all just shoot up and just forget about it all or whatever else. And that's scary.
They're criminalizing poverty in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've worked in frontline services for years and years and years of various different kinds, and I've watched them be systematically dismantled, whether it's statutory or non-statutory. They're just, the whole safety net has been pulled away from people. Right. Absolutely.
It has indeed. Let's take some comments from the watchers, listeners. Let's see. Right. Tyrannosaurus on the YouTube. The House of Lords has in modern times been much more left liberal, if not truly progressive, force than the Commons because of the makeup, much more religious and Lib Dem than the Commons has. Some of it hasn't been. Yeah, that's all. That's the whole. Yeah, great point, Tyrannosaurus, and great name as well. Muhammad Ali, with his BMW. I blame Corbyn. Good for you. Blame away. You're wrong, though.
Thankfully, he's got broad shoulders, isn't he?
Yeah, man. Like the broadest, man. Right, let's see what else we got here. Right. I'm just getting used to this interface, so we're scrolling back through. This is a good one. Jez Hunt, it's the Battle of the Beanfields continued, Thatcherite fascism. For those who don't know, Battle of Beanfields was, people like yourself living in buses, travellers, and just out there living their lives, and the police were ordered to just go and smash them to bits, like physically, weren't they? Like send a message to the community. So cheers for that, Jez. Much appreciated, mate. I mean, Zoe, like, have you ever encountered anything like, maybe it's not to the extent of the Beanfield, or were you even there?
No, I wasn't at the Beanfield, although I did know people at the time who were, and I know of the brutality that happened there, which included pregnant women assaulted with batons, included children watching their homes be torn apart and burned in front of them on the field as the eviction was carrying on. I mean, a lot of the footage has now been released that was withheld from the British press for a long time after the Battle of the Beanfield. They didn't want people to see what they actually did. It took many years before that was released. I have witnessed, I have been in a quite violent eviction, illegal eviction from a squat previously. And I've witnessed brutality at protests and things like that. But yeah.
I mean, for me, surely it would be, if we want to think like a Tory, economics, right, money, surely it would be much more efficient to provide spaces around the country, proper sites for travellers to go to, and not have to like pay for all this policing, X, Y, and Z. So I think that adds like to the point of what you're making, that it's actually an attack to try and like just completely eradicate that lifestyle.
It's absolutely. There used to be a legal requirement for every local authority to provide a site, and was that removed with the CJB, or was that another piece of legislation that they brought that into? It was around about the same time. It was around about the same time that they removed that local authorities didn't have to provide a space anymore.
Indeed. So, final question before we let you go, Zoe. And for everybody, really, I mean, like, what's next for the movement? Obviously, first thing we've got to do is stay vigilant. January the 25th, was it? No, February the 25th or January the 25th? January the 25th is the next reading in the Commons and the Lords. So what's next for the movement in general? Like, big victories last night, lots to be positive about, but what's next?
Well, as you said, stay vigilant and keep campaigning and keep being noisy and keep being a nuisance and keep resisting. I have to say that my big takeaway from the protest in London, the big massive positive from that protest in London, what gave me so much hope, was coming away with the sense that they've actually massively shot themselves in the foot with this bill. Because of the fact that they have united so many different causes under one banner. So everyone who has a vested interest in their right to be able to dissent, and everyone who has a vested interest in their right to be able to protest because they are part of a movement, is being brought together by this, or the vast majority. There were so many different perspectives, so many different groups present at that protest, standing shoulder to shoulder in solidarity to support each other. And for me, that was huge. So I think that carrying that spirit forward as well, that spirit of working together for change. But, you know, joining the groups, following this, there was a massive digital protest, which was, they believe, quite effective as well in assisting with changing the mind in the House of Lords. So, you know, people writing to the Lords, people writing to their MPs, emailing in, phoning in, that kind of thing. I think is an important aspect as well. You don't have to be out on the streets at a march. There's all sorts of ways to get involved with that.
Indeed. I mean, you speak of togetherness, and we've lacked that a lot the last couple of years. So it was a beautiful thing to see, like a lot of the footage from the weekend and people coming together. And obviously, Mohammed mentioned Corbyn before. I saw a speech that he gave, and it just makes a smile, you know. He's talking about hope and love and coming together and how movements come from that. And, you know, he was in Parliament Square, the Chartists, the suffragettes, and like there's a long lineage of protest that we should never forget about in this country and obviously beyond too. And a lot of that is like change society for the better. And just what Mohammed said about blaming Corbyn before, he said sarcastically, we like a bit of clarity on this show. Welcome back to the fold, Mohammed. Hey, Zoe, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, mate. And you were the first guest on the live stream ever. It's the second one we've done.
Wow.
So you are the first. So thanks
so much.
And I really appreciate it, man.
Really appreciate it.
Like what you've done by attending the protests at the weekend. And for many of us who couldn't be there, you know, you're carrying that torch for us all. So thanks to you, and obviously thanks to everybody else who was there in London, Manchester, and wherever else. Just got all the love for you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Cheers, mate. All
the
best.
All right, cheers.
Bye. There's Zoe, everybody, and hey, what a great person.
Oh, that was lush. I love that she's doing it from a bus as well. And like, we're whinging about doing it from our houses and the problems we have, and she was great.
And I was whinging before about like, oh, it's either too hot or too bloody cold in this house. I've got a blanket. And then when I put you on full screen before, I was like, I'm too hot. I've got to take this jumper off. And that, now I'm cold again. So like, I might put you on full screen the next section and put my jumper back on. Continuity's fucked, but like, it's freezing.
It's fine.
Right. But Zoe was telling it. I was saying, oh, what's it like living on a bus, when I was speaking to Dane? She said, lovely. Brilliant, love the freedom, but it's bloody cold at the minute in the morning. I bet it is, you know.
It is, yeah.
But fantastic, man. Really, really pleased to have her on, and what a great first guest, eh?
Yeah, mint.
And Tyrannosaurus there, thanks, Zoe. Joanne G, thanks, Zoe, and others as well. Really good stuff. Right, the next section is about the cost of living crisis. So just bear with us, I'll just pull up slides for this. And as I say, we've got a bit of video 4 years later, and also a bit of positive news too. But before that, if you would like to help us out directly, please go to the Cow Daily YouTube channel. Links in the description of this podcast, actually. I remember to put them in this week. So you can get that there. That would really help us. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, people might not have been here because obviously there's a lag on the stream. it's going to help us get like the watch hours that we need to get, and it's going to help us get the channel monetized and obviously progress the new project a little bit quicker. Another way that you can help and support is by becoming a patron and gaining access to MTC's private chat forum. That will pick up over time. The initial people are like in there, we're trying to get the crack going. But you can do that by going to patreon.com/cowdaily. That's patreon.com/cowdaily. Trying to create employment on union wages, trying to get people doing this full time, and try and stop us if when that happens. My God. Bit of a bad time to launch something new, Alice, in January in the depths of winter when everybody's skint after Christmas on the cusp of a cost of living crisis, which is quite seamlessly a link into the next section. So that's patreon.com/cowdaily, link for the YouTube channel. And also, if you're here now, please share the stream, let your friends know all about it. It'll be progressing as the weeks and months go on, and that'll be nice for us, won't it, Alice? Yes. Right, what we got? Cost of living crisis. Let's see. So let's look at what a cost of living crisis is, because you know, some people don't know, and I wanted clarity earlier today as well when I was looking at this. So a cost of living crisis simply refers to a situation in which prices of everyday goods and bills are rising while wages and state benefits fail to keep pace. The UK's current crisis is particularly acute because several different factors are driving the increase, meaning Brits, big issues words, not mine, are facing price hikes across the board rather than just on bills or just on groceries. Also, some of the factors driving the current spike in prices include high demand for oil and gas and pushing up energy prices across the globe, leading to higher costs for energy companies and subsequently their customers. Government support offered during the pandemic, such as reduced VAT rates in hospitality ending. Shortages in staff across a number of sectors, including hospitality and transport. That's partly due to the pandemic, but also compounded by Brexit. The reason I took the source of the big issue is like, they mentioned Brexit, which seems to be like the ultimate taboo at the minute. We'll come back to that when we have a chat in a minute, though. Which saw many foreign workers leave the country. Shortages of some goods due to supply chain disruptions. And what could be the reason for that? All of these factors have driven up the UK's inflation rate, which is a measure of how fast prices are rising. There was actually a gentleman in the comments on the Facebook page, and he was saying he feels lucky because they managed to negotiate, like through collective bargaining, that their wages would be linked to any rises in inflation.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
Good for you. Nice one.
Something we need to come back to, actually. Yeah.
Well, that's possible solutions for people through unions and whatnot. So inflation is anticipated to reach a 30-year high of 6%, so that you'll be getting a 6% pay rise by the spring, combined with tax hikes. The Institute for Fiscal Studies estimates that a person on an average 30 grand salary will see their pay cut by 1,600 per annum. Wow, that's a lot, man. So how much worse off will I actually be? Because wages continue to stagnate in the face of price and tax increases. Millions of people are soon to be worse off in 2022 as the cost of living squeezes household finances. The amount you will lose in real terms will depend on your personal circumstances, but the Resolution Foundation estimated last month that households will be an average of £1,200 worse off in 2022 than in previous years. The additional cost will affect poorer households disproportionately due to the fact they pay a higher percentage of their income on things like energy bills, the Resolution Foundation said. So, my good friend Alice, what's your thoughts on that?
Kind of reading that, I kind of try not to have a little panic attack.
Panic attacks are us, isn't it?
No. I mean, this is kind of coming in the energy thing alone. I mean, they're like saying that's coming up in April. Now, about 5 days before Christmas, my energy company told me that our direct debits were going up by another 35 quid a month. And that's when we're already paying a direct debit, which is quite high. Because apparently what we were using wasn't covered in the direct debit, so they were hiking that up. I got told 5 days before Christmas. It's basically like the equivalent of about like 500 quid and like, oh, we'll send you a bill in the post. Like, cheers.
That's cheers, mate.
Brilliant time in that. But we don't, like, we don't use loads of energy. It's like, we're not really kind of wasteful people. You know, it's not like we've got like every light blaring. Like today, like when I was coming up the stairs to do this, I was like a dad, like walking around, turning light switches off, and that doesn't need to be on, and that doesn't need to be on. And that's coming from a, you know, come from a household at the minute where we do have two incomes coming in at the minute. Yeah. We're not on high incomes, but, you know, we've, prior to this, you know, we've been getting food on the table. We've been getting our bills paid on time, and we've done okay. You know, we know a lot of people who were struggling a lot more. And I'm looking at this thinking, this is awful. Like, I dread it every time I go food shopping now. The price of food is absolutely ridiculous. Even when you're meal prepping and you know, kind of meal planning and stuff, again, stuff we all do, and, you know, try not to be kind of too wasteful. And I'm kind of thinking, oh, like, I'm a bit worried about this. I'm absolutely terrified for people who I know that are struggling. You know, I've got family members on universal credit and stuff and things like that. And we spoke last week about, you know, the poor tax, you know, particularly if you've got prepaid meter in and how much people are paying for their energy there. A few years ago, actually, I did try to start a campaign to stop people on prepaid meters being paid more, paying more for their energy. I do feel like, well, there was a couple of things that kind of hampered it. It started gaining quite a lot of support in the general public, but it didn't in the left in general. And I do think it wasn't really seen as a sexy cause. To put it bluntly, you know, it's not something cool.
But surely, you know, I mean, I didn't mean to put in, but I want to mention something. Like I said last week as well, like, I don't know what the left is. I'm not directing that at you, but this is part of what you just said. If the left isn't for going to bat for the millions of people already living in poverty after however long of austerity over a decade, soon to be in even more poverty and people dragged out of like the working class, middle class, and dragged into under the poverty line because of this oncoming cost of living crisis, then what the fuck is the left for?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that happened as well is I did actually manage to get a couple of MPs who were kind of like, actually, this is a really good thing, you know, to kind of talk about, and, you know, we should definitely take it forward. And like, here's a couple of ideas of like people you can go to. And then the run up to the 2019 general election happened, and they basically, every politician's like automatic email replies was basically like, don't bother us, like, we're dealing with the election, like, we're not gonna look at anything, and because we're trying to win positions of power rather than, you know, kind of look at any issues that people have, which is ridiculous. You think, if anything, at a general election, that's when you should kind of be listening to what the public are wanting more, really. But what do I know?
Well, you would think so, yeah. But like, that's not really how it works, is it? Because we're now obviously back into a whole rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic thing. I read something recently that in terms of energy bills, under the Tories, it could go up, I think, increased by about 50%. Then Labour came out and said X, Y, and Z, and in real terms, it would be only rising by 45%. So that's what we're having to deal with. Yeah, the illusion of choice. This makes no real material difference for millions of people in the UK at all. And quite frankly, that's sickening. Like, we're being asked to support a Labour Party who do next to fuck all and will do next to fuck all about this problem until it's like smacking them straight in the face. And it's to your point about like not a sexy cause or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. The people don't seem to want to go to bat for people who've been demonized through programs like Benefits Britain and things like that. And I mean, we've both worked in the community sector for many, many years. Like, it's just normal for us to be around all different kinds of people. And they're humans, and people have been dehumanized to make it easier to just ignore them. But the problem that the Tories and also Labour have got here is they can't just ignore this now. This is not to be ignored. This could quite easily spiral out of control into real civil unrest. Because if you get a sweet spot in terms of how many people are affected by this, that's a force of nature and it cannot be controlled.
No. I had a conversation as well about, you know, because you start talking to your family members about this and, you know, kind of how it's going to affect them. And me mam, God bless her, because, you know her and her flowery way of words. She was saying how she'd been to the doctors and she'd been talking, she's going to kill me for saying this, but she'd been like discussing menopause and the doctor basically like offered her HRT and she said she wanted to keep her hot flashes so that she didn't have to have the heating on as much. And I thought, oh, sorry.
The thing is, your mum, I don't know whether she's serious or not.
No, I think she's deadly serious.
Wow.
That's like, that the funniest yet bleakest thing I've kind of heard. And obviously we always like help each other out and stuff and things like that. I'm not going to see a cold or anything like that. She puts the heat, you know, she'll just stick an extra jumper on. She puts the heating on for a cat more than anything else. People who've got, you know, particularly you've got like respiratory illnesses, you know, which she has, or you know, kind of other people who are very elderly, you know, who you think are making these choices about not sticking their heating on. It's not just sad. It's actually dangerous. It can literally kill people, and it's unforgivable that people are having to make these choices. You know, do they put the heating on or do they have something to eat that day? Mm-hmm. It isn't right. It isn't.
It's disgusting, and it for me it comes back to like what my baseline is for like giving a shit and trying to like do something about it. If there's no alternative within the sort of mainstream political spectrum, which there isn't, in terms of everybody having what they need and a little bit more, then I'm not interested in engaging with that mainstream political spectrum, and we'll just fall back on what we've always done, which is mutual aid. And I think that's what we're going to have to do going forwards. And the sad part of that is it might even bail the government out of a spot, because obviously, you know, there are big networks now where we'll try and like distribute food and do whatever we can do. But I'm concerned that the problem's now going to be so big that even like all of the different like networks around the country can't even scratch the surface of it, because a lot of them were put in place because of austerity. So we've got like 10, 11 years of that, and then this, and then the COVID pandemic. And then we've got all the aggravating factors around that too. Mm-hmm. So it's really scary, to be quite honest with you. Like,
and the thing is, the energy companies as well, they're raking it in. I mean, British Gas had profits of more than 172 million in the first 6 months of 2021. You know, I don't know if you saw it actually, and the energy company OVO as well released this blog post.
Oh my God, tell what's going on.
So they, OVO released a blog post to their customers with like 10 money-saving tips on how to keep warm. The tips that they had on there, this blog post was so tasteless, I wanted to give it a lateral flow test. they said that people should do star jumps, that you should hula hoop, or you should cuddle your pets to try and stay warm. You know,
Wow, man.
And like we've worked in various different sectors. A blog post like that doesn't just go out. Like, no. I don't think people realise how many different people that would have had to go through, like, particularly because it's a corporate piece of writing as well. And did nobody read this thing and go, what?
Well, the thing is, though, does that not speak to one of the aspects of this cost of living issue? For people in those positions who sign that off, they're generally going to be on like middle to reasonably high wages for like middle to upper management, aren't they?
Yeah.
So in terms of how this will affect them in their life back in their family home, they're probably going to be able to pay this, aren't they? And they'll probably be the people going, well, we should all pull our belts in and whatnot. And I'm not hating, not one little bit. I want that for everybody. I want that to be like a way people can, you know, be paid a fair amount of money for a fair day's work. And that hasn't been the case in the UK for a long time. Many other countries around the world either, because like capitalism just wants to keep squeezing the last drops out of people. And my concern like is that it might have people turn on each other, because scarcity always leads to conflict, doesn't it? Because what's going to happen? Crime, it's going to go through the roof, because people are going to go out and steal, and they're going to go out and probably burgle as well. Mm-hmm. And who are they going to burgle? Those people. So yeah, that's going to, like, there's going to be these sort of sub effects that are going to go on. And that's a real worry. I'm really worried about the social fabric, because, you know, with the backdrop of like the Brexit divide and all of the other manufactured culture war divides, there's not that like sort of community spirit, and a lot of people don't know who their neighbor is. So there's this kind of distrust.
Yeah.
It reminds us of like bloody like East Germany, the whole Stasi thing, where it was like your dad was spying on you. Well, I don't think it's that extreme, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, and we were encouraged to do that a lot through the pandemic, weren't we? Like grass on your neighbours if that, you know, if they've got people round and stuff and things like that while they're, you know, getting absolutely, you know, kind of doing lines in the garden of number 10 or whatever it was that they, you know,
whatever allegedly were doing.
Yeah, and we're not, you know, that's the other thing as well. We're not, you know, they've often used the phrase "all in this together." You know, it's that isn't the case. You know, I think there was a thing in Forbes about the 10 world's most richest men. Their wealth has doubled since the start of the pandemic. And there's been like, you know, in the first year of the pandemic, there was like a new billionaire made every day. Some people have really profited from what we've been going through in the last couple of years, and in the other and in the austerity, you know, years before that as well. It's not that everybody, you know, everybody I know, you know, whether they be working class, whether they be middle class, is absolutely definitely worse off, you know, than they were and has been. But it's, you know, when you look at people like, you know, people in the government, when you look at people like Elon Musk and, you know, and Bill Gates and all the rest of it, there was a bunch of names on that 10 richest men who I was thinking, who's that? So I can't tell you who all of them were, but it is printed. We're absolutely not in this together. There was the Joseph Rowntree Foundation today. They said that there's 1.8 million children living in poverty in the UK.
Inexcusable. Inexcusable. Like, yeah, can I just say something? I'm banging this whole like go to Mars thing and all of that, but only when everybody on Earth is taken care of and a little bit more. When we get that shit right, let all cheer the rich men going to Mars. Well, maybe he's not cheer, but I'll watch it and maybe silently hope them. No, I won't. No, I'm not even going to say that. That's like, that's really bad. That's bad karma, man. I can't say that. but I want to have that moment that people had in the 60s when they went to the moon. And this, like, I mean, for rave tracks, like in the next 20 years, it'll be fantastic, because the amount of times like we choose to go to the moon's been sampled. It's like, but that's another thing. Just for rave tracks alone, let's have them fly to Mars, because the samples will be tremendous.
Yeah.
But I want what I'm probably never going to get, but you never know. I mean, what could happen is like this could actually prick the conscience of people who otherwise don't give two fucks about people living in poverty, because they're being dragged into it too. And if there's one thing we've learned over the last sort of 10 years during the austerity era and the whole benefits Britain like smearing thing, people want to feel like they aren't that. Mm-hmm. But we've learned through the pandemic, you're a couple of pay packets away from absolute obliteration.
Absolutely. Absolutely, without a doubt. The last time I think I was thinking like the last time we kind of saw this with, you know, kind of wages being capped and you know, kind of prices going up and taxes going up was in 1381, just before the Peasants' Revolt booted off. So all we need is like Wat Tyler arrives from the dead and smack Rishi Sunak with his little red suitcase or whatever. It's absolutely despicable. Everything is more expensive now. They're even trying to gentrify foraging. Keep seeing all of these articles like collecting free food, but buy this like basket for 50 quid. To, like,
oh, tell us about it, man. Get yourself a carrier bag and get yourself an M-Wood.
Yeah. It's,
fuck your mad wicker basket. You can't afford it. Your kid needs baby formula. One thing I'd like to say before we move on to the positive news section, just as me dog's tablet alarm goes off, he's got epilepsy. Got to make sure he's getting his tablet. One thing I would like to say is, if you see maybe somebody, they've got a buggy, something like that, maybe in the supermarket, maybe see them slip, like maybe he's a little bit of food in the back. You didn't see that, did you? No, we didn't see that. That didn't happen, did it? No, that didn't happen. And I'd just like to leave you with that little Thundercats ending. So, we've talked about some dark stuff, but taking feedback from watchers and listeners and something we talked about as well, actually, so it was nice that we're all on the same page. A little bit of positive news from out there with the movement and what's been occurring and just in the world in general, because this type of stuff just doesn't get amplified as much because we're all like sort of gnashing with teeth and wailing, aren't we? So, first thing, just today, refuse workers in Eastbourne have won a 19% pay rise after strike action. Up the GMB. Nice one. That's so, like, what I'd like to say to people is, as well, going forward, particularly now and the things we've been talking about, join a union. Through the union, it could be, particularly with certain ones like Sharon Graham, and I think it's that's Unite and whatever, they've decided that they're just going to, like, instead of going down the political route, they're going to just try and win things. And obviously that 19%, it's 13% more than inflation's predicted to rise with this cost of living thing, which is 6%. So I don't know what the lads and lasses doing the refuse work and we're on, but hopefully that like saves a few families. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's really good. That's really good news. And I would definitely, you know, reiterate that in joining a union. You know, mine have been really helpful, you know, even just kind of showing a bit like of solidarity when I really needed it. Kind of working in a sector that I can kind of be quite isolated in. And I know lots of people are on things like 0 hours contracts as well. They often don't know where they fit into a union. I'm a wobbly. I'm with the IWW, but it's really looking at what's best for you as a union as well, and not just joining one as well. It's actually organising within it and getting to know you. Even if you haven't joined a union, you can organise with your workmates. You know, it's just about getting out there and doing it. And, you know, especially if you've got a boss who tells you not to discuss your wages, that is normally a sign that you absolutely definitely have to discuss your wages with each other. Do it in whatever way is best for you at the time, but definitely unionize.
Yeah, I mean, I know obviously we've just been illustrated there, like money's tight, but it's really an investment as well, because if things go tits up and you can involve yourself in a collective situation. I mean, I've been in a situation where I'd slightly changed sectors in a previous job, had some trouble with my new employer, who I'll not get into it, but God, that was, and I'd moved cities too, and I was between unions. So I'd rang the specific union up and they were like, she actually seemed to take some glee in it, this particular person. Sorry, can't help you. You should have been a member. I was literally like getting the forms and blah, blah, blah. You know, so always be part of a union if you can. And I know at times in the past they've been ineffective, they have, but I really do see a groundswell coming up, like grassroots organising, and it's really great to see. So
there are definitely unions out there as well who will help you from the first day that you sign up, and you know they'll do as much as they can. And I was really proud, particularly when some people were really, you know, in quite serious hardship at the start of the pandemic. I was really proud of the way that my union stepped up to help its members as well. And that's why, even though I didn't have to access that at the time, that is why I'll keep paying my dues. Like, absolutely, it was a beautiful thing.
Cool in the gang. Nice one. Next one. And this is something I sent to one of our friends yesterday. New Scientist magazine. Strongest evidence yet that MS is caused by the Epstein-Barr virus. A huge study of US military personnel suggests that almost all cases of multiple sclerosis are triggered by the common Epstein-Barr virus, meaning a vaccine could largely eradicate the condition. Now, this speaks to the mRNA vaccines, and obviously the technology's advanced like exponentially since the start of the pandemic, because there was billions upon billions upon billions of like research and development money put into it, simply because like capitalism had to protect itself, so that's what happened. And also that they made a hell of a lot of bloody money out of it as well. So that technology, the mRNA stuff, is now being used in other areas of research. And the reason they used the US military personnel is they needed a huge sample size to like work out whether these things could potentially work. And US military personnel, they get blood tested like really frequently over a long period of time. So they got access to all of that blood work. And this is what they found out. So they've linked that with all of the exponential growth with mRNA. So for people like our friend and many others with MS, it's not just a preventative thing from what I read. They're thinking that it could actually help people who've had it. And I spoke to our friend yesterday, and she's had it for 10 years. She was diagnosed 10 years ago, so she was really happy to hear it, and we had a bit of a chat about it. It was nice.
That's good. I know a few people who are living with MS as well, and it's just one of, you know, that and other conditions, you know, like motor neurone as well. It's good to hear things like this, because a lot of these conditions they often don't know a great deal about, and then when they start understanding it a bit more, you just think, yes, that's good. Like, you feel like actually getting somewhere, because, you know, with some, it's just, you know, having one breakthrough like this is a really big deal. Because it leads to lots of other really good things as well, where you can just have no hope for a lot of people, and things that you like motor neurone as well. But there's been loads of stuff about, you know, about that, new drugs coming out on the market as well. So yeah, no, that's good to hear.
It's great. And I really hope that because of all of the research and development money that did go into mRNA, it actually like helps many, many more people around the world. Mm-hmm. And give me a bit of hope, like obviously on a personal level, because we love our friend, don't we?
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that's repeated millions of times around the world. Mm-hmm. So last bit of positive news. Britain's longest married couple celebrate their 81st anniversary. Ron and Joyce Bond married in 1941 and said it was love at first sight. You can see that like on the left there, he's giving a right smooch back in the old war days. The fingering days is what might my... Big Ron there. Big Ron still got it on the right now, hasn't he?
I actually saw this. I thought that, and they were absolutely lovely. It was a proper like feel good story, really. I liked it. I like, apparently when they got married, like there was people saying it's not gonna last, and they're like, you know, they're both over 100 now. No, that's absolutely lush. That, yeah,
just a lovely thing, isn't it? And I mean, my grandparents, they all of them died by the time I was 8 years old. I mean, by no means was like grew up in poverty. I always had a safe place to sleep and eat, mm-hmm. and whatever. But I grew up in a council house in the 1980s with single glazing. Mm-hmm. So there was like ice in winter on the inside of the windows and things like that, you know? Man. So like, but my brother, when they lived in the house before, for the first few years of his life, they still had an outside toilet. So if you think about like what my grandparents like had to go through. So my point is, I've never really learned about this stuff. So whenever I see things like this, it just like gives us a nice warm feeling. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like really happy for them, and just hopefully he's still on the finger, you know? I promise you, I didn't do all that like lovely preamble just to get to the fingering joke. But there you go. I can't help it. I'm a wrong'un.
You are. Look how lovely they are, man.
Oh, that lush, man, aren't they? Just look at them, man. Like, live long and prosper, my friends. That's all I've got to say. I love older people, man. I really do. Like, I think like all this like boomer chat and all of that, it does a disservice to a lot of really good people. We don't want to collectivize them all the same. I mean, look, bad people are bad people, like whatever age group or whatever sector of society they're in. And let's have it right. I mean, a lot of people of like the older age groups that haven't grown up in the internet era. So without being disrespectful, they're a bit more gullible than other people, you know? So we'll come on to that. Actually, we'll do a bit on that about like sort of how people are like being like having their heads mashed up by bastards on the internet and how it's affected society. I think that's a good piece for a future episode. You reckon?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Defo, mate. So that is episode 2 of the Cow Daily live stream. Thanks to Zoe Quick. Really love talking to Zoe. She's a lovely person, isn't she?
Yeah, that was
And
lovely.
She's out there fighting for us all and our rights, and that's a beautiful thing. Yourself as well, Alice, always a pleasure, never a chore. Pleasure to have you as a friend as ever. And what I'd like to do, just on the positive theme, actually, before we do that, stick a little banner out. Please do go to the YouTube channel. I know I keep harping on about it, and I will be for a long time. Yeah, I think we're on something like 1,600 subscribers, and we've just started like uploading and using it and that. And thanks to everybody who's done that and subscribed. People have been telling us they've been going on with like, they've got like alt accounts. They've got like 3 or 4 YouTube channels. They've been clicking on it. And, like, we never asked them to. Really cool. Shouts to Cooler and that. If you want any of your dubstep and 140 BPMs, he's your kid. Follow him. He was kind enough to do that for us and other people too. So please go to the YouTube channel. If you want to get part of the revolution, then get involved in the MDC private chat forum. And you can do that by getting instant access by signing up as a Milk the Cow patron at patreon.com/cowdaily. That will help us evolve this. It will help us bring more people into edit to do all of the things that you need to do, because we are taking this seriously. This is the inception of an independent media organization, and we want to try and do good faith media. We're going to use the money to be regulated by Impress, which is to a higher standard than the mainstream media, which are regulated by IPSO, and also join as individuals the National Union of Journalists. All that costs money, of course, and we welcome that regulation. We want to be regulated. We want to demonstrate very clearly when the attacks come, and they will, that you know, we've been regulated independently, quite frankly. So there you bloody well go. Thanks for all your comments as well. There was one that I actually do want to show. It was just in reference to what I was talking about. Like Paul Veronica, he is from Belfast. 2 seconds. Touts get shot. For those who don't know what touts are, it's that's a grass in Belfast. You can see it written on walls by some people. Shouts to Paul as well. Paul's one of the initial patrons. Thanks very much, mate. I really appreciate your kindness and your positivity, mate. All the best. So, as I said, just in line with all the positive stuff, I'd really like to play it out with something that did give us a bit of hope, and it did give us a good feeling. And I absolutely love this bloke unrepentantly. It's got nothing to do with cult and all this other bollocks that centrists want to spout. I just like him as a bloke, as a gadgy. He's a good man. And this is the big lad himself, Jeremy Corbyn, and he's at the Kill the Bill at the weekend. Thanks, Alice. All the best. And thanks for everybody who's been out there. From next week, hopefully, we'll be getting the audio stuff out. I'm just learning how to edit audio now, so just bear with us. But like I say, if you want to become a patron, we can get this stuff out quicker, because we've got editors waiting in the breach. So happy days. Love to all. Here's the big lad.
Hi,
Corbster. Corbster, I love it. Being part of Corbyn's cult. Bye. Bye now. Bye. Bye. Oh, he's loved.
To be strong and thoughtful and confident enough to recognise that all over the world, young people have all the hopes, the enthusiasm, the imagination, the art, the music, the ideas, the science, the maths, and all the other things. They have that sense of determination. And they do not want to live in a divided, racist society. They support Black Lives Matter because it challenges that colonial history. They do not want to live in a world where we're perpetually about to go to war with somebody for something or other. Instead, they want to live in a world of peace where those resources can go for education, for health, for housing, for environmental sustainability, rather than war. And so, I finished because I've got a real serious look from Auntie down here. And I just finished by saying this. Thank you, because a protest, a demonstration, gives people hope. gives people an opportunity and gives us that dream of what a better world will be. This square, this place has been the centre of protest. The suffragettes were here, the Chartists were here, and so many others were here. They're the ones that gave us what we've got. It's up to us to give the next generation what they haven't yet got, what we haven't got, but what we want them to have. Thank you very much.